Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. From the University of Helsinki comes a study about how midlife physical activity can help you prevent cognitive decline. That's a good long-term follow-up study of 3,050 twins from the Finnish twin cohort, and they showed what happened when one group is very physically active and the other is sedentary. Big difference in cognition. So I'll deal with that and a lot of other issues on health and healing. Today's one of those days for commentaries. I wrote a commentary that I think you'll find of interest, and you'll have an opportunity to call in. It's a continuation, article number 71, that does not include the 13 legal letters, but the Wikipedia roadmap to a catastrophic future. Rich Gill, myself, and it'll be posted on prn.fm, so you can download it and, of course, share it with people. Also today from John Whitehead, mile markers of tyranny, losing our freedoms on the road from 9/11 to COVID-19. Very important. And also today, last week, I played a segment involving a professor at Cornell who found that what was happening with the new identity politics had become absurd. Like if someone has a peanut allergy, suddenly they have to have a whole group and they have to recognize people of a like mind on campus, otherwise they feel disenfranchised and they feel threatened. I mean, this is how insane it is. We're functioning at the academic level right now of four-year-olds. So with Asperger's syndrome. So we have really lost it at this moment, and it's not coming back in the near future. In time, it will. All revolutions of stupidity, arrogance, and tyranny always hit an endpoint. This also will hit an endpoint, but no time in the near future. So expect your students to go to schools and learn nothing unless they're in the hard sciences, and to come out blithering idiots. And that's only the best that they can come out. They can also come out completely dysfunctional, suicidal, have no sense of meaning and purpose in life, and attach themselves to any harebrained cultish movement there is. And that's what's happening now. So that was from an ultra-liberal. I also promised, I thought I could do it in the same day, but there wasn't time. I wanted to have a more measured conservative point of view. So today, the cultural suicide is painless. This is from one of the most measured people. I don't accept everything he has to say, but Victor Hansen has a lot to say. He's from Stanford University. And he's that person they bring out when they need someone to clarify something from a wise person perspective. Now, you can believe in nothing, partly, all of it, none of it. You'll have a chance to share your insights. I wouldn't play either of these two if I didn't believe they have something to share with us that takes us a little deeper. Also, you know you're being played. You know you're being used. You know that the people who are using you think that you're a blithering idiot with no capability of thinking independently. So I want to just show you how contradictory, absolutely hypocritical, all of the Democrats were. Now, the Republicans are equally hypocritical and idiots, but these are a special time of stupid because they must have thought we would never remember what they were hammering for 16 years about illegal aliens. Now, I was opposed to them. If you remember, if you've been listening to the show, I support illegal aliens coming into this country legally. I do not support draconian measures. I don't support them paying money that they don't have. They're coming from abject poverty. And many times now they're coming because of economic collapse, because of agricultural collapse. Their country is no longer sustainable in their agriculture. So you shouldn't punish a person for that. In fact, I've stated, and you've heard me say, we should have a completely different border opening where we have maybe 500 or 600 border stations where a person would make sure that their DNA and children's match, so you stop the high degree of gangs bringing in girls, young girls, teenagers, 12 to 16 years old for sexual slavery, which is in the hundreds of thousands. So you stop that. But then you have them go through a clinic, much like they used to do at Ellis Island, where you can check them for diseases. We don't want someone who has tuberculosis going right into the population. You can spread it, or other conditions. So if they have an illness, We can treat it right there in top-notch clinics, free medical care. So at least they enter and are healthy. Then if they have no place to go, if they have no employment, then we can, for a period of time, house them in humane housing for families with their own kitchenettes and living room, dining room, decent housing. And we can have a universal 24-hour cafeteria with healthy foods. So whenever a person's hungry, they have something to eat. And then we can have counseling, learning English, helping get a job where they actually are paid without being exploited. We can help them to guide them to the places safest for them and their families. Do you think people are coming from another country wanting to go to a ghetto that's filled with organized crime or gangs? No. These people are coming from MS-13 and Mexican Mafia and other places where they lived in constant fear. So we should be there to guide people, to assimilate them constructively, bringing the uniqueness and beauty and wonderment of their cultural differences from our own, so we can be that blending pot. Now, if you do it that way, then you don't have illegal aliens. You're not exploiting illegal aliens so you can get their votes. You're treating them with decency, and you're honoring them as a sacred human being. Nobody ever does that. Wouldn't that be different? Well, I oppose Clinton. I oppose Obama. I oppose all the people who looked at them as if they were some kind of human herpes coming into our country trying to exploit our welfare system. So what they've done is exactly everything that they said they were against. So I'm going to play a clip showing you the difference between the two, what they said now versus what they said for 16 years. What hypocrites. Also, I'm going to play you three clips, all from Australia. Why? Because Australia has even more tyranny than the United States, if that's possible. That's like comparing 1922 Italy with 1932 Berlin and Germany. We're in bad shape. Doesn't mean that it's not reversible. It can be, but not until people awaken and decide to be courageous enough to risk putting their energy out there in a constructive way. By the way, can you show me what Martin Luther King, what Marcus Garvey, what all the greats of the civil rights movement in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, Malcolm X, show me the buildings that they burglarized and vandalized and stole from. Show me the people they beat to a pulp or killed. Show me the buildings they torched. Show me what they did to bring their message of change. Of course you won't. It doesn't exist. They weren't perfect, but my God, did they help us get where we're at today, and we owe them that because they were measured, they were patient, they looked at the long battle of overcoming adversity and prejudice, and they did so nonviolently, just like Gandhi. There were times when Gandhi was going to give up, and if it weren't for his friends who lived with him, especially his biographer, he would have given up. They inspired him to keep going. You forget how many times he was jailed, how he was tortured. But he would not jail or torture people in return. We learn from Gandhi, Spinoza, Eurydicles, Maimonides. We learn from Socrates. We learn from the people whose wisdom and insight that we benefit from today. Exactly who out there who is violent are we hearing from? How are we learning something from them? Something to think about. So in Australia, they're right there. They're a fascist country today. In fact, you're not allowed in the country if you want to talk about vaccines. You're barred. In fact, if you're a doctor and you want to help prevent or treat or even cure COVID-19 with four commonly available medications that are non-toxic, inexpensive, and proven by 51 clinical studies to work, you could go to jail. That's how draconian they are. So good for three journalists to stand up, and something zero journalists in America have done, not the mainstream media. Zero in America. And they had three. You're going to hear from them. So we've got a lot to share today. Of course, we always start with the latest on health and healing. This was a long-term study that showed that there's every reason in the world to exercise and vigorously exercise. Of course, you can't start off vigorous. You have to graduate from step to step to step. As your body acclimates and gets stronger, as you get your wind, and as you begin to feel more confident, you increase your pace, you increase the intensity of the exercise, till one day you're ripped. You're in good shape. You have endurance and strength and stamina and flexibility, motility, and you're not afraid to go dancing or go out and climb mountains. You're not afraid to do things because you can do it. You're going to live a longer life. Your brain is going to be more functional, and your cognition is going to be better. That's what this University of Helsinki study did, a very unique study. They followed 3,050 twins, half of whom were sedentary and half not. Very good study. So, but you would have known that anyhow. This was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. Now, at this time, when I'm keeping myself as healthy as possible outside of just doing too much talking on the phone to counsel, help people, and there are more and more sick people to help, I take astragalus every day. It's a very important herb. It helps protect my lungs. I'm out. I'm in a protective environment. I have 25 acres, animal preserve, a sanctuary here on the ranch. And only once a week do I go out, and then I wear my mask, go to a farmer's market, get some fresh produce. But I always err on the side of caution. Build the immunity naturally, yes. Be strong in all that you do, yes. But don't be reckless. Here is the latest from Shenzhen University in China. Astragalus suppresses production of pro-inflammatory cytokine. That's important. So according to news reporting originating from China, astragalus, which, by the way, has been used in traditional Chinese medicine for a long time, will enhance your immune function. And recently it was shown to be anti-inflammatory. And you want to turn off inflammation in the lungs and in the heart and in the brain. And it does that. So that's good news. It's just one more piece of the puzzle to help us stay healthy. Also, from the University of Basel, which is in Switzerland, a lack of oxygen in tumors promotes metastasis, meaning spreading. So metastases are formed by cancer cells that break away from the primary tumor. And a research group at the University of Basel has now identified a lack of oxygen as the trigger for this process. So, what does that tell me? It tells me that there is an important relationship between oxygen supply to tumors and the formation of metastasis. And that can increase the number of treatments. That's one of the reasons that ozone therapy, O3, and hyperbaric oxygen are very good. And that's why exercising is good, because you're increasing oxygenation of the blood. And lack of oxygen leads to more metastasis. So people are very sedentary, people are overweight, people don't exercise, you have less oxygen. So getting yourself more oxygen, that's exercise. Deep breathing, that's more oxygen, that helps you. And if you just walk for 10 minutes a day, you could help alleviate chronic joint pain in minutes. That's according to the Duke University. And this is a research they did there. It just shows the natural analgesic effects of walking to the brain. So when a person exercises, the body makes opiates. These are the feel-good hormones, what we call the endorphins. They give you that runner's high. So you go out stressed, you're thinking about a lot of problems, you finish your workout, and you feel okay. That's what it does. But it also helps alleviate pain. Furthermore, exercise triggers the release of those endorphins that improve your mood and lessen stress for hours afterwards. So do your walking, fast walking. It'll help strengthen weak muscles. It'll help strengthen joints. And brisk walking is best. A natural pain reliever. also for women suffering from menopause, and there's a myriad of conditions, about 71 that I counted when we did our study, and we were measuring a one-year study, 500 women. We had a 94% removal of all those conditions, night sweats, hot flashes, thinning of the hair, thinning of the eyebrows, excess body weight without overeating, loss of libido, loss of energy, mood swings, insomnia, incontinence, you name it, these things can happen and do. Well, a study from the University of Agricultural Sciences in India shows that fenugreek helps those. Fen, F-E-N-U, Greek, G-R-E-E-K, three syllables, fenugreek. So fenugreek every day. This was published in Phytotherapy Research, very important. And one last thing, a study finds that when you're eating foods that are rich in calcium or supplementing, you lower your risk of colorectal cancer in women. This is the South Korean's Seoul National University of Medicine. 700, 800 milligrams a day. That's not a lot. So very important. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to show you the hypocrisy of what Harry Reid, who is the head of the Senate, and before Mitch McConnell, and then also Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and Nancy Pelosi, what they all said when it comes to immigrants. Now, I'm one of those guys that was considered so far left that the left didn't know what to do, because I didn't believe in slogans or emphasizing, something to make people feel good. I said, let's do something, and here's how you do it. It's in how you do it that matters. And, of course, they never do anything, and I've been showing that on some commentaries. But I just want to show you their blatant hypocrisy and why you shouldn't believe it. Remember I said yesterday I listed, between the last 2 days, I've listed 75 major issues in life that they lied to us about. And suddenly they're going to be honest about the COVID vaccine? No, they're not. They're incapable. And these are just one more of the group of people that have lied to us. Back in a moment.
If making it easy to be an illegal alien isn't enough, how about offering a reward for being an illegal immigrant? No sane country would do that, right? Guess again. If you break our laws by entering this country without permission and give birth to a child, we reward that child with U.S. citizenship and guarantee of full access to all public and social services this society provides.
It is wrong and ultimately self-defeating for a nation of immigrants to permit the kind of abuse of our immigration laws we have seen in recent years, and we must do more to stop it.
I think we can enforce our borders. I think we should enforce our borders. To have a situation where 40% of the babies born on Medicaid in California today are born of illegal immigrants creates a very real problem.
I'm deeply opposed to illegal immigration, and I call on the federal government, the president, and the immigration services to stop the influx of illegal immigrants into this country.
I believe we have very serious immigration problems in this country. I think, as you've heard today, sanctions against employers who hire illegal immigrants is virtually non-existent. Our border is very porous.
Well, look, I voted numerous times when I was a senator to spend money to build a barrier to try to prevent illegal immigrants from coming in. And I do think you have to control your borders.
We simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented, unchecked, and circumventing the line of people who are waiting patiently, diligently, and lawfully to become immigrants.
Is that illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple. Until the American people are convinced that we will stop future flows of illegal immigration, we will make no progress.
Okay, there you have it. Today they say just the opposite, because they know if they can get 20 million illegal immigrants to vote for them and their candidate, then everything is fine. But it wasn't fine for 16 years. This is the type of hypocrisy I'm opposed to. It's not about Trump. There's nothing about Trump I like or support. It's about these people acting in a self-righteous manner that somehow they're doing the right thing when they've never done the right thing. Now, I'm going to share a special commentary. It'll be posted today. As many of you know, I'm taking the lead on challenging Wikipedia. I've written 71 articles. I've sent 11 legal letters. Right now we have a massive amount of people signing as signatories to a petition to ask the 5,000 plus more or less Wikipedia donors that they reconsider. It's a very nice letter, no threats. But what we do is we attach that letter showing them all the things Wikipedia really stands for, their lack of scholarship, their lack of credibility, acknowledgement, transparency, their biases, their character assassination on anyone involved with complementary alternative health, and the consequences of that. I can't imagine that from 58 countries, some of the most respected authorities in those countries, Nobel Prize winners and professors emeritus, heads of colleges and universities, they're all signing this petition. It's just amazing. I did not expect that. Well, you can too. You can go to PRN and read it, sign it, and we're sending them out every single day, hundreds per day, have been for 2 weeks. But now we have two more efforts we're going to make to challenge Wikipedia. And each one gets stronger. The next two will occur over the next 4 weeks, and then on the fifth week that happens, and I'll announce it, then I'll announce the press conference we'll have with Robert Kennedy Jr. and a lot of other people on the lawsuits we're bringing against individual editors, lots of editors. Now, standing behind me are hundreds of people who've been libeled, whose reputations have been destroyed, who have had no opportunity to correct anything because they won't allow you to correct anything. It's all a pack of lies. What Wikipedia stands for when it comes to its objectivity and fairness. There is no fairness to those of us who've had our reputation slandered. So that's why I'm doing this. It takes a lot of scholarship, a lot of time, but we're just deconstructing the myth that Wikipedia is a legitimate encyclopedia. In our opinion, it's not. That's why I'm doing these. At the same time, to show what they chose to not include in a completely false and derogatory bio that I didn't put up there, they put it up there, and then they keep adding to it and protect it so you can't change it. I've shown the truth. I didn't think after being in the public eye for 53 years I would have to do this, but I had to. My lawyer suggested that they want to take into court everything that I've actually achieved. I mean, at a national or world-class level in 17 different fields. So that is being done now, and it's already up there. You can go and download it for yourself. It's the video bios. 21 of them. And that's the real history. So this is just the next in this. It's called Wikipedia, a roadmap to a catastrophic future. So during the past 19 years, Wikipedia has risen to the admirable status as the world's most formidable and trusted encyclopedia to educate and inform the public about acceptable and unacceptable medical systems and therapies and interventions. Now, although there are no accurate figures, our best guesstimate is that there are billions of searches on Wikipedia about health topics over the years. However, here is the problem, and it's a very serious and potentially life-threatening problem about relying upon Wikipedia's content regarding many medical modalities. For example, virtually everything that comes up for searches on alternative and complementary medicine is negative. It's toxic and provides an unscientifically founded and derogatory narrative. It's all wrong. Today, there are hundreds of thousands of highly qualified and board-certified physicians and licensed practitioners who have extensive training and clinical experience in a large variety of complementary and alternative disciplines, chiropractic, naturopathy, orthomolecular medicine, acupuncture, traditional Chinese medicine, homeopathy, functional medicine, holistic dentistry, veterinary sciences, therapeutic massage, yoga, even nutritional help. Moreover, across the span of these therapies, there are millions of peer-reviewed studies that in many cases are largely supportive of the scientific veracity for the safety and efficacy of these complementary therapies. Therefore, how is it possible that all these doctors around the world, all these practitioners, many from leading medical schools, top universities, top hospitals, can all be lumped into a single pool and labeled wrong or delusional? Not only are they cast as being in error, but also as villains and quacks and charlatans for offering medical interventions that Wikipedia disingenuously classifies as pseudosciences. So what might be the motivation behind Wikipedia's efforts to mischaracterize and defame entire medical practices, most of which are decades, if not centuries, older than conventional pharmaceutical-based medicine? For us, the answer is blatantly apparent. To categorically destroy the reputations and growing popularity of these medical systems and their advocates, that's their motive. Destroy everyone in complementary and alternative medicine. Everyone. Yet the arrogance of Wikipedia editors goes beyond simply disparaging complementary practitioners. It is also a condemnation of many millions of patients, hundreds of millions of patients per year, who have found relief and benefit and even actual cures for illnesses by following non-conventional medical protocols, either alone or together with standard orthodox medicine. When we examine the backgrounds of many of the Wikipedia editors who control their entries, we inevitably find individuals who have absolutely no professional experience on the very subjects they are condemning. They have no medical degrees. There are a couple physicians, but the vast majority have no medical, no science backgrounds in there at all. They have never conducted clinical trials or ever treated a patient with any of these therapies, yet they stand in judgment of them. They have never published anything in a notable peer-reviewed medical publication or journal, and yet they judge them or deny they exist. But worse, they remain completely anonymous by concealing their real identities, aside from whatever backgrounds they reveal on their personal Wikipedia pages or their little badges they display for their years of volunteering to compose and edit. What they share in common is a resounding and fanatical belief in modern skepticism. Over the years, organizations associated with the movement known as skepticism, which is a dogmatic, scientific, materialistic view that traces its origin back to the mid-19th century. It's been discovered that Wikipedia's lack of organizational oversight and control over the encyclopedia's content has made it an ideal platform to promulgate the skeptic ideology and to discredit legitimate medical, psychological, and scientific areas of research it disagrees with. You could give it 1,000 studies, 10,000 studies, 100,000 studies on a topic from the peer review literature, it'll just dismiss it, even though it has no studies on its own that are qualified. It is not uncommon to discover that for any given entry dealing with a particular complementary and alternative medical therapy or biography of one of its advocates, skeptic editors monitor and far outnumber honest editors without conflicts of interest who struggle to keep the pages neutral, unbiased, and free of defamatory language. The French philosopher and radical atheist and father of what is called positivism, Auguste Comte, back in 1857, he can be properly identified as the architect for the scientific materialism that modern skeptics embrace. He said, "Science is our only source of genuine knowledge about the world." He also said, "It is the only way to understand humanity's place in the world, and science provides the only credible view of the world as a whole," end quote. Wow. Then any of the mystics, any of the people who have found through vision and faith, a connection to a larger, more meaningful purpose to life, the sacredness of life. None of that counts, not to this person. We have likely heard this kind of argument many times before. It is called religious fundamentalism, a subjective belief that is framed in a mentality contrived as a conception of false absolutes and a primitive logic based upon fear and only seeing the world in terms of black and white, good and evil. There are many serious and potentially catastrophic consequences to this dogma. Nevertheless, it is the indispensable premise upon which skepticism bases its vehement assault on complementing alternative therapies. The tragedy is skepticism constructs a view of life that is intrinsically amoral. There can be no incentive to act ethically, spiritually, morally, or develop human values that provide life with meaning and purpose if the only thing that exists are atoms, molecules, and neural activity to account for the thoughts, creativity, and feelings of human beings. The problem is that there is not a single study that provides unquestionable evidence to support a view of life reduced to only matter, nor has it reached any consensus within the scientific community. Therefore, for the militant skeptic, we are nothing more than computers, machines. The mind and consciousness are illusion. One very popular celebrity skeptic is the philosopher of mind, John Searle, at the University of California, Berkeley. He puts it simply that in one of his quotes, he said, "Mental phenomena are caused by neurophysiological processes in the brain and are themselves features of the brain," hence denying the capacity of mind and spirit. Yet here lies one of skeptics' hypocrisies. That is, by their own argument, their belief in scientism's ultimate truth is nothing more than a mental illusion itself. More dangerous, this is a doctrinal belief that confirms that there is no need for ethical behavior and the cultivation of higher values if we are nothing more than a brain composed of fat, protein, water, and electrical currents. This is the underlying belief motivating Wikipedia skeptic editors. It is the incentive behind their mission to eradicate many alternative health practices which either deviate or are contrary to this 19th century determinist belief on Wikipedia. Like a kennel of Pavlovian dogs, the most devoted Wikipedia editors who spend hour upon hour daily composing and editing entries are conditioned by the bells and whistles to receive rewards that have been created by its co-founder, Jimmy Wales. Skeptic editors vie for the accumulating rewards for the number of entries composed, the number of edits, deliberating in editorial conflicts. In return, editors receive more administrative authority and special privileges to make final rulings on controversial content. Skeptics have excelled in gaming this decrepit Skinnerian reward system and consequently possess administrative control over a minimum of 1,000 entries. With the full support of Jimmy Wales, who embraces the catastrophic skeptic philosophy, these editors are capable of holding non-conventional medical disciplines and its practitioners in a perpetual Wikipedia gulag. Fortunately, there is now a growing number of voices turning away from Wikipedia and condemning its skeptics' orientation. We have heard back from department chairs at university and also medical schools, many professors, a Nobel Prize laureate, presidents of associations, editors of many medical and health journals, and physicians and licensed practitioners from all forms of medical practice, including the dental and veterinary sciences, and former Wikipedia editors who have walked away from Wikipedia and who refuse to assist its funding. In our opinion, skeptic editors represent a modern-day scientific cult, using the encyclopedia as a psychological death squad, Robespierrean guillotine court without due process to silence complementary and alternative medicine. It is a modern-day hate group of alt-science. Real evidence-based medicine means nothing to them. Rather, it is a psychopathological effort to raise skeptic dogma as the ultimate inquisitional court of a medical orthodoxy aligned with the drug-based pharmaceutical paradigm. Skepticism and its humanitarian threats to health and genuine well-being needs to be more thoroughly understood by Wikipedia users and society at large. More scholars, journalists, citizens need to be taking it to task and deconstructing the fallacies behind its foundational principles. To permit skepticism to increase its influence on the internet and university campuses will be catastrophic, and it's a nihilistic recipe for disaster, and will condemn future generations to come with the despair of psychological illnesses, because in a skeptic world, there's no meaning or purpose in life. Sadly, this is already coming to pass. I'm Gary Null. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear from one of the Australian journalists who is telling the truth. And it's interesting on this. He says that history will vindicate the Swedish COVID strategy. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Two words that should put the fear of God into every politician in this country, every highly paid bureaucrat, every chief medical officer, every health administrator, and every unemployed man and woman now looking at lives shattered, careers devastated, dreams obliterated, and futures destroyed. Two words that are also two European countries, Sweden and Switzerland. Let's start with Sweden. 4 months ago, we interviewed on Outsiders Professor Johan Giesecker, the former state epidemiologist for Sweden and the mentor to Anders Tegnell, who has been in charge of Sweden's controversial response to COVID-19. On that show, which any politician in Australia could have chosen to watch, Professor Johan Giesecker spelt out in crystal clear detail that you could not eradicate the coronavirus, you could only slow it down, and that the only people that should be quarantined were the elderly and the vulnerable as a preventative measure. A major lockdown, he warned, such as they did in the UK and we are now seeing in Victoria and New Zealand, he warned, would simply leave the population without herd immunity, so permanently vulnerable, and in the process completely destroy our economies. Let me now quote from Friday's editorial in the UK Telegraph, not some crazy conspiracy rag, but one of Britain's most respected newspapers. Here's what they said. So now we know Sweden got it largely right and the British establishment catastrophically wrong. Anders Tegnell, Stockholm's epidemiologist king, has pulled off a remarkable triple whammy. Far fewer deaths per capita than Britain, a maintenance of basic freedoms and opportunities, and most strikingly, a recession less than half as severe as our own. Our arrogant quangocrats, says the UK Telegraph editorial, and state experts should hang their heads in shame. Their reaction to coronavirus was one of the greatest public policy blunders in modern history. Millions will lose their jobs, tens of thousands of small businesses are failing, vast numbers are likely to die from untreated or undetected illnesses. Sound familiar, Daniel, Jacinda, Anastasia? Also this week, Dr. Sebastian Rushgrove, a Swedish doctor writing on the Spectator Coffee House blog, confirms firsthand the success of the Swedish approach. He writes, "All the COVID patients have disappeared. It is now 4 months since the start of the pandemic, and I haven't seen a single COVID patient in over a month," says the Swedish Dr. Rushgrove. "At the peak, 3 months back, 100 people were dying a day of COVID in Sweden, a country with a population of 10 million. We are now down to around 5 people dying per day in the whole country, and that number continues to drop. The daily risk per person of getting infected is 1 in 10,000, which is minuscule. Basically, COVID is in all practical senses over and done with in Sweden. After 4 months, Sweden ripped the metaphorical band-aid off quickly," he writes, "and got the epidemic over and done with in a short amount of time, while the rest of the world has chosen to try to peel the band-aid off slowly. COVID is over in Sweden," he writes. "People have gone back to their normal lives and barely anyone is getting infected anymore. I am willing to bet," he says, "that the countries that have shut down completely will see rates spike when they open up. If that is the case, then there won't have been any point in shutting down in the first place." That's Sweden. It appears that the warnings we made on this program before anyone else in Australia may well have been accurate. And then there's Switzerland and the use of the drug hydroxychloroquine banned in Victoria and Queensland for treating the coronavirus. As I have repeatedly pointed out on this show, there are now dozens of international studies that show the drug used in the correct combination with other drugs and the correct dose, it is effective, including the latest study that shows countries that use hydroxychloroquine early on have a 79% lower COVID-19 mortality rate. But here's the clincher. Switzerland briefly banned the drug after The Lancet claimed it was killing people. That's the medical journal. That study, you'll remember we discussed it here, was completely debunked. And 2 weeks later, The Lancet withdrew the study and immediately Switzerland reinstated the drug. And guess what happened during the 2 weeks Switzerland stopped using hydroxychloroquine? Well, according to a study done by Johns Hopkins University, the consequences of suddenly stopping hydroxychloroquine can be seen by examining the case fatality ratio index for Switzerland. It can be seen that during the weeks preceding the ban on hydroxychloroquine, the index fluctuated between 3 and 5%. But after stopping outpatient hydroxychloroquine use, the country's COVID-19 deaths increased 4 times. To the highest level it had been since the pandemic began, oscillating at over 10 to 15%. Then, when early outpatient hydroxychloroquine was reinstated on June the 11th, the fourfold wave of excess lethality rapidly returned back to where it was. And there are plenty of other reports, such as the one on DocWire News, that says our findings suggest that patients confirmed for COVID-19 infection should be administered HCQ as soon as possible. Or a study from China that says patients treated with HCQ at the time of early hospital recovered faster than those who were treated later, or another study that found that when the drug was given in the first 7 days, the benefits were greatly improved, or this graph that shows the case fatality rate of countries in blue that use or encourage the drug, and in red, the ones that don't. I don't need to spell it out for you. But here's the real joke. I have been denigrated this week by the medical community in Australia for merely reporting this news and discussing hydroxychloroquine use around the world, talking about the drug. Bizarrely, the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners magazine attacked me personally, as well as federal MP Craig Kelly. You'd think these lefties might actually be worrying about curing COVID patients and protecting the elderly rather than...
Okay. Where in the United States do you hear any journalist coming forward with the actual science from peer-reviewed literature and showing that we have a drug that's safe and effective now that could save, well, in that one study, 79% of lives? Had we been given this early on, and it was here all along, we wouldn't have had all the deaths. Instead, we did everything wrong. So that's what's important, all right? Something important we're missing. Hydroxychloroquine with zinc and zithromycin, and incredible results, especially if you start it early at the lower dose, 200 to 400 milligrams, once or twice a day, whatever the doctor prescribes, instead of the 9,000 milligrams to critically ill people at the end of their life, which speeds up their death. And yet that's what they were using, the antagonist. Why? Simple. Because hydroxychloroquine is a treatment that would necessitate us not to have a vaccine. If you give hydroxychloroquine to patients who have comorbidities now, preventatively, then you're going to reduce their opportunity to get the COVID-19 and then cause their death. So you could be saving thousands, tens of thousands of lives right now in the United States. So just wanted to share that with you. Now, before we go on with more, just a couple program announcements. First and foremost, I have a special for today. I didn't make up this special, and unfortunately, I'm not in the office. I should have been for this one, because the value is $129.97, so $130, and you're only paying $39.99. That's a $90 savings. I don't know who came up with that concept, but you're getting muscle, the powder. Now this is a high-quality powder. Muscle stuff represents the next level, plant-based protein. is packed with 24 grams. Most have between 14 to maybe 20 grams protein. We have 24 grams of pea protein, the best protein. It's a delicious formula, and it's designed to help your body easily absorb protein, leaving you feeling energized and nourished. And it's for people who care about their muscle mass, right? It's just got a few ingredients: pea protein, organic cane juice, lecithin, sea salt, and vanilla. That's it. It's that simple. 24 grams of high-quality plant protein. So you're getting the pea protein. You're getting a power aging video, very important video, and 7 Steps to Perfect Health video. All that for $39.99. So all you have to do is make a call. And by the way, the 7 Steps to Perfect Health is one way to get everyone into a healthy lifestyle. How to identify and eliminate risk factors, how to cleanse and detoxify, how to rejuvenate, de-stressing your life, removing toxins from your home environment, exercising. All these different steps are in there. And the power aging is, I took a group of people 20 years ago, and I put them on my first anti-aging protocol. This was, I put this on PBS stations all across the country. It was very successful. You see real people doing good things for themselves. You can identify with it. So all that's necessary now is just to give a call. You're getting a big savings. Wow, almost $90. Call this number, and you're getting something everyone in this audience needs. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Now, separately, in a week and a half, I will be signing off after 45 years on WBAI. And I've been the anchor to the station as a host, having raised more than $50 million, brought in probably 80% of its audience over the years from my ABC network show and WEBD and WOR and WMCA shows. And there's been some outstandingly good broadcasters there and management, Samori Marksman, Rosemary Mealy, Rick Harris. Andrew, one of the best of the best, as a program director. So anyhow, I'm the station program director. Linda asked me not to mention why I'm leaving. Just, okay, I won't. At least not while I'm still on, but later I'll explain it. And it's constructive. But I just think that it's time for them to make a radical change. And I was willing to sacrifice, give up my time slot for younger voices to come in with local community messages. But that's their choice. In any case, write down this number, because if you're used to hearing me on BAI, you won't anymore after next week. Here's our number to listen live every day. 774-337-6068. 774-337-6068. And you can go to the archives, download any show. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Okay. A lot of you are listening. By the way, just to give you an idea, when I was having a conversation with the station manager, I said, you know, if you all don't change and get with what people want and are tuning to, podcasts, internet radio, the brick and mortar stations are not going to be there in the future. So I said, Google, and by the way, any of you can do this right now. Try it. Google conservative radio. And all you have to do is just go to Google and just type in conservative radio. I'm going to do it right now while I'm on the phone with you. Okay, it's conservative radio. And in the upper left-hand corner, they will have a number of how many people as your search, or whatever search engine you're using, 165 million. Now do the same thing for liberal radio. And it gives you all the stations around the country and all the famous personalities who are on there, Rush Limbaugh and whatnot. I don't listen to that because I can't stand the propaganda and stupid talk. And now Google Liberal Radio, and you get 192 million people. And by the way, I'm listed in Liberal Radio, and Progressive Talk Radio is right at the top of Liberal Radio. So meaning people are searching for this information, and that's Progressive Radio Network. Now, put in there something that did not exist a couple, 15 years ago, Progressive Radio. Okay, what do we got? 228 million. Okay. What that means, that search results, that means that there's 220 plus million people searching something about Progressive Radio. And of course, Progressive Radio Network is right up there at the top. Quote, the number one radio station, Progressive Minds. And then it goes on and gives you more information. We're up in many of the top listings. So just understand that the future of radio is progressive, because the ideologues have controlled conservative radio, and it's very fundamentalist. It's black and white. You're either with us, you're against us. All the liberals are the problem. And liberal radio is just the same. If you're with us, good. If you're not, you're our enemy, and we're right, and the conservatives are wrong. And over 100 million Americans who once belonged to the Democrat or Republican Party have said goodbye to them, and now they've gone into a progressive mindset because they just want to be independent. They don't want someone telling them what the reality is and what the truth is. They want to find it for themselves. And that's what we're thankful for. So that's the future. Now, I want to share one other thing before we close out our show today. This will take us up to the top of the hour. And this is about what we're seeing in our society. I believe that we should have a capacity to go to neutral and take a quick look around us and ask, is the story of all dark ages, when civilizations finally prefer suicide, they do it easily, and the remnants flock to the countryside to preserve what they can, allowing the cities to go on with their ritual self-destruction? Well, we're seeing that destruction in all the cities, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Washington. We're seeing it in New York City, certainly, and there'll be more. It's not all of America by any means. So one of the things I would say is, I do not see this improving, even when COVID is finally, after the election, declared no longer as a threat as it has been, or there's a different approach, or they mandate a vaccine. I see more people moving to intentional communities where they can continue a quality of life, do new work, but be in a more peaceful environment. And there are hundreds of these around the United States, thousands around the world. All the time, people from all over the world are saying, hey, we have a beautiful community down here in New Zealand, and you know, we have good soil and water and progressive minds. You know, there's no destruction of anything. People work together. That's the future. And we can do it. And we can do it if we believe that we have a right to do it. So in my opinion, I believe that many of the older liberal values are being deconstructed. Why? Because we're living in the most radically polarized climate in my lifetime. America's past, present, and future are in the process of being recalibrated entirely. And it's all based upon some type of identity politics. It could be your ethnicity, the color of your skin, your religion, your age, your social status, your economic status, your career status, whether you're political or non-political. All these things now identify you. And then you take on the identity of who you are from that. And then you tell people, I want to be around people who are Italian, or I want to be around people who are Spanish. We live in a very cosmopolitan world. And one of the benefits of being around a multicultural group is we get the benefit of the wonder of their uniqueness. Instead of isolating ourselves through an artificial construct called cultural appropriation, we should be appreciative of people who have something that we can share, their cuisine, their music, their history, how they deal with issues, how people have power, how just go through Europe and see all the multiple populist parties that all are represented to some degree or another in their body politic. They have voices that will stand up to the duopolies and of the power elite and shout them down. In the United States, we do not have that. We just have two parties controlled by the same people. What did it mean at one time to be a good liberal or to be a good conservative? Just to be a good person. You cared about assimilation. You cared about integration. You cared about the doctrine of accept people based upon, as Martin Luther King said, the quality of their character, not the color of their skin. You didn't say someone was not equal to you or, let's say, deserving of the treatment that you demand for yourself because of some limitation in their identity. You looked beyond identity. You looked at the person themselves. But now we're engaged in a whole race-based re-education and training sessions in the workplace, all predicated to stop racism, but themselves are racist. We have anti-fascists who are fascist. We have people who want to stop the violence of the police, rightly so, and I go far further than they, because I go through and deconstruct how a person ends up poor. The payday loans, the credit card interest rates when you can't pay the full payment or at all, and the decline of public services and social services and human services and neighborhoods, and then what that does to the people living there, and how all that has to be changed. It's not just about, the police are just one tiny factor of that. Not all police are equally culpable. But why would you then think that violence is a good way to deal with violence? It doesn't equal out. It's not a net zero-sum gain. We need to stop for a moment and ask ourselves, does hate-filled nihilism construct a better world? I do not see that it does. I see that we are relegating our discomfort to a sense of tribalism, and we're doing it unapologetically. And that is because of our own sense of self-preservation through identity. So now we have tribal politics, we have tribal corporations, we have tribal athleticism. I boycotted all sports. I won't watch any sports, not because they're not talented, not because I didn't. I'm an athlete. I'm a world-class athlete. I've won 600 races in my career. You know, I was athlete of the year many, many times. Hopefully next year also. But I refuse to watch something when slave labor in China is allowing a $50 billion sports franchises to exist in the United States like baseball. And hence, China controls any criticism by any athlete against it. That's wrong. Just like Nike is the strongest supporter of all athletic sponsoring, and yet look where its shoes are made and how much they're paid. And yet there's no irony, nor is there any criticism from the people taking these large paychecks and then saying that they're angry about something. Well, what about being angry about where that money came from? How about starting there? So we have relegated ourselves to the lowest common base and primal energies today. So the liberal conservatives and the liberal elite in the public sphere, they're the ultimate hypocrites. These abstract doctrines that they tell us to live by are wrong. We need to take back the right to make choices on our own.